Thank you for coming. We think all voices should be heard.
Log Talk Radio.
Local call.
One moment.
1 minute to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a question. My camera is, where do I look?
There.
There.
Not there.
There.
There's a time card right below on the right there, too.
The time card is where?
Just below on the right there. Lady there.
I don't see her clearly. Okay, timekeeper. I want to hold it up so I'll make sure. Just give me the sample. Oh, we stretched. Okay.
Good evening to our live audience here in Chicago, our viewers watching and listening online, to our candidates, moderator, political correspondents, broadcasting partners and sponsors, to every individual taking the time to care to watch this historic debate tonight. No matter where you are tuning in, no matter what party or group to which you belong, this debate is for individuals. The voter, the taxpayer, the hardworking middle-class worker, the struggling single parent on minimum wage, the small business owner, everyone. I'm Christina Tobin of Free and Equal Elections Foundation, and I welcome and thank all of you for being here tonight. Tonight, we're all taking part in something good and real and honest and open without debate contracts and private interest controlling. Without them controlling the questions we ask and the answers and the candidates deliver, free, open, and fair. Free and Equal works to improve the electoral system of the United States by bringing the elections back to the people where it belongs. We do this by opening the debate, improving ballot access laws, and forming nonpartisan coalitions to unite people and organizations across the political spectrum who also want free, open, and fair elections. Tonight's debate is the first of its kind, and our sponsors represent a diverse group of media, businesses, musicians, radio personalities, organizations, and individuals representing all types of political ideologies. I imagine our audience is just as diverse. Tonight, you will meet four presidential candidates. Two of them lean to the left, while the other two lean a little more to the right, giving us a perfect balance of ideas and viewpoints on how to fix our broken nation. These candidates secured enough ballot lines to be here today. In the future, we hope to have more resources so we can open the debate even further with more debate, more candidates at every level of government. Ultimately, we, the people, are responsible for our government. If we don't pay attention, if we don't vote, if we don't protest or discuss important issues with friends, coworkers, and classmates, then we get more of the same corrupt, dysfunctional system, no matter who's in charge. But if we turn off the distractions and listen and learn and read and question more about who's really benefiting and educate ourselves on how we really got here, and figure out how each of us can make a positive impact, that's the way to change a system. Knowledge sharing, truth seeking, open debate, fresh ideas, and discovering a common ground amongst each other. No matter what your political persuasion, we are at a critical time in our nation's history. It's time to take our country back from the private interests who control our beliefs, our opinions, and our lives. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our moderator this evening is award-winning broadcaster and media personality, Larry King.
Down.
His new online home is Aura TV, and he is the host of Larry King Now. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you. Woo! And welcome, everybody. I'm very happy to be doing this. I think all voices should be heard. A few notes about the format for tonight's debate. It's a really easy job for me because it's a rather simple format. Each candidate will have an opportunity to make a two-minute opening statement. The order of these statements have been randomly determined. Six questions will be asked in all in the 90 minutes. The questions have been selected from submissions made via social media. After a question is asked, each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer it. Each candidate will have a total of six opportunities in all. Once all four candidates give their two-minute responses, they'll each have an additional 1 minute to expand or not expand. They can choose to respond or not. Candidates can use their additional minutes or save their time to use it later. We will wrap up with a two-minute closing statement from each candidate. And with that, let me introduce these four independent candidates. First, Jill Stein, the mother of physician, longtime teacher of internal medicine, and the Green Party nominee for president. Jill Stein. As you can already tell, we are permitting audience participation. We're in downtown Chicago, by the way, at the Hilton Hotel. Next is Rocky Anderson, the former mayor of Salt Lake City in the Justice Department, the Justice Party nominee for president. Next is Virgil Hamlin Good Jr., former member of the U.S. House of Representatives and the Constitution Party nominee for president. And the final independent candidate is former Governor Gary Johnson. This is and Gary is the Libertarian Party nominee. The first question for tonight's topic is our electoral system. This question is from the Free and Equal Elections Foundation hosting this debate, and will be asked by Christina Tobin. Christina?
Well, thank you. We'll start from the left to the right, and here's our question. A top two primary is an election in which party labels appear on the ballot, but parties do not nominate candidates. Instead, the candidates choose their own ballot label. All candidates run in the primary, but only the top two vote-getters appear on the ballot in the November election. The system is currently used in Louisiana, Washington State, and California. It is now a ballot measure in Arizona, Prop 121, with other states interested in adopting the system. What is your position on the top two primary system and why?
Jill Stein.
Thank you. And again, thank you so much to Free and Equal and to all of you for being here. Yes, I think top two does not enlarge our democracy. In many ways, it confuses things more. It puts many candidates onto the ballot altogether, and it arbitrarily attaches party labels to them. Any candidate can choose any label they want. So it really degrades the meaning of our political parties. Where they have meaning, and I know they don't always, but there are some that do have meaning. that aren't bought and sold to the highest bidder. And the Green Party is one of those parties. And I know there are some other parties here as well, the independent parties, where the party actually represents real values. And the top two obscures the meaning of those parties, and it essentially puts everyone in together so you really can't tell who's representing you, and whoever has the biggest budget stands to win that primary. And essentially it becomes another way that big money can control our elections. So I oppose top two, as the Green Party does, and we actually support a whole variety of election reforms for the purpose of enlarging our democracy, not increasing the sellout of our democracy. We are calling for getting money out of politics through public financing. We're calling for opening up the airwaves to all qualified candidates. We are calling for a constitutional amendment to clarify that money is not speech and that corporations are not people, to take back our constitutional rights.
All right, Joe, thank you. Next, for 2 minutes, Rocky Anderson. Rocky.
The top two system is simply a continuation of the degradation of our democracy by this duopoly of the Republican and Democratic parties. Our electoral system has been so constricted, our democracy so degraded by these two parties from the very beginning in terms of ballot access, even getting on the ballot so you can give people choices. This top two option would simply tell the duopoly, you just go ahead and keep raising all your money. You put your own candidates out there. You could even have just two people from the same political party, and that means no choice for the voter. Last night in all these presidential and vice presidential debates, look how constricted the debate has been when you've had two parties there, the Republicans and the Democrats. They're arguing about who's going to spend more on the military budget. Barack Obama last night bragging that he's increased the military budget every year that he's been in office. They're both trying to outdo each other in terms of who's going to drill more, both offshore and on public lands, and neither of them even dares to talk about getting rid of this disastrous failed war on drugs. Neither of them talk about catastrophic climate change, and neither of them talk about poverty. When we've got the worst poverty rate in this country since 1965, so we need to open up the choices. In South Africa, the world rejoiced at the growth of their democracy following apartheid. I've got the ballot, the first ballot in their presidential election that had 18 people's names on it.
Right,
that's real democracy, and that's giving the voters real choice.
Rocky, just one quick question. When you were mayor, what party were you in?
Well, I was in the Democratic Party, but it was a nonpartisan office. I was a Democratic candidate for Congress in 1996, but I've had it with the Democratic Party.
Virgil Good, what party were you in?
I was the Independent, Democrat, Republican, and now I'm in the Constitution Party. Always conservative.
Okay. Your response for 2 minutes to the initial question.
Thank you, Larry. First, I want to say thanks to you for being here, for lending your name and your prestige to this event, and to thank Free and Equal for their hard work in bringing a much broader vision to the American people so they will know they've got more choices than just Obama and Romney. I do not favor the top two system. I agree with Jill when she said money is not speech, and that the top two system enhances those that have the most money. However, I am not for public financing. I was not in favor of $100 million for the Democratic National Convention of taxpayer money $100 million to the Republican National Convention of taxpayer money. The top two system is primarily a state issue. I would not be in favor of federal legislation repealing what Louisiana has done or telling Virginia or telling Maine or telling Arizona or New Mexico, any state, what they should do. But we've got to work at every state and every legislature and oppose top two. In my view, it's a hindrance to true democracy for grassroots Americans that don't want to be controlled by super PACs and PACs.
All right. And our final speaker on this topic, I know you are a Republican as governor of New Mexico. Gary Johnson, your response.
Well, running for governor of New Mexico as a Republican, I ran completely outside of the political system. Completely. I mean, I went and I introduced myself to the Republican Party 2 weeks before I ran, and they said, you know what? We like you. We like what you've got to say. We're completely inclusive. You can go and you can make your case to all Republicans in this state, you know, take part in the debates, take part in the discussions. Well, that's the way that politics should be. I was able to make that presentation. I was able to make that case. And by the way, the Republican Party chairman at that time said, now you can do all this stuff, but you just need to know that you'll never get elected because it's not possible to become or get elected governor in the state that's 2-1 Democrat. Well, I did get elected. So as governor of New Mexico, completely outside of the political system, I've always been pro-choice regarding everything, okay? So should this be top two voting top two candidates voting system? This should be something that gets ferreted out at the local level. This should be something that gets ferreted out at the state level, not the national level. Look, there is only a couple of voices being heard here, and it's Tweedledee and it's Tweedledum. It's 2 weeks ago. It's 2 weeks ago, two candidates talking about who's going to spend more money on Medicare when Medicare is a system that you and I pay $30,000 into and get a $100,000 benefit. It's a 3-1 what you pay in and what you get out. It's not sustainable, yet it's indicative of our federal government today, which is on an absolute unsustainable path, the results of which are going to be a monetary collapse unless we actually bring this under control. And as a third party, I've been given the opportunity here to make the case that's not being made by either of the two major candidates.
Thank you, Governor. By the way, this is a quick personal. A lot of people ask me why I would consent to do this. One, I like moderating. And two, I like asking questions, even though I didn't ask these questions. They were submitted. And three, I think these people deserve a lot of credit for coming forward. It's easy to sit back and watch these people stand up. They may not be counted on November 6th, but they're counting today, and they deserve to be heard. We have each is now entitled to a one-minute response if they care to use it. Jill?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to mention talking about how all of us need to stand up and demand real democracy and demand free and open, inclusive debates. I just want to mention that my running mate and I went to the doorstep of the Commission on Presidential Debates at Hofstra University last week, and that we were arrested, we were tightly bound with plastic restraints and tied to chairs for 8 hours for daring to stand up and demand open debate. But this is what all of us need to do. I encourage you to go to my website, billstein.org, and sign the petition there for opening the debates and for challenging the Commission on Presidential Debates. We should not let them do this again.
Rocky, you have 1 minute.
The top two system is a sign that these two parties, this political duopoly in this country, is trying to further put their stranglehold on our democracy. We have to stand up together. And in federal elections, it is a federal matter. We shouldn't leave it to the states. The corrupting influence of money in this country is at the root of every major public policy disaster. It's why we don't have health care for all, as in the rest of the industrialized world. It's why we aren't providing international leadership on the climate crisis because of all the corrupting money coming from the fossil fuel industry, and it's why we have this enormously wasteful military budget with this military-industrial complex putting pressure on Congress and the White House.
5 seconds.
So we need public financing of elections for our democracy. We need
Virgil.
Free and equal access
okay,
to the public airwaves. Thank
Virgil.
You.
Virgil, 1 minute.
Thank you. The top two system, as others have indicated, favors the super PACs and the political action committees. They're political action committees, not just of businesses, but of unions. I'm for no political action committee, individual contributions only, and no super PACs. And I believe Congress can craft legislation with presidential leadership to stop political action committees. Big money that funnels through the PAC is the greatest hindrance, in my opinion, to free and open elections and freedom and democracy in this country. We threw off the king in the time of the revolution because of heavy-handedness. We need to throw the PACs out now and vote for third parties that will stand up for America.
All right. I'm reminded that this is a rebuttal 1 minute. You could use it or not use it, Governor.
Well, I think that when it comes to political campaign contributions, that candidates should be required to wear NASCAR-like jackets with patches on the jackets commensurate. So what's really needed is 100% transparency. I will tell you that regardless of whether or not Romney gets elected or Obama gets elected, three things are going to happen. We're going to find ourselves with a continued heightened police state in this country. We're going to find ourselves continuing to militarily intervene in the world, which has resulted in hundreds of millions of enemies to this country that wouldn't otherwise exist. There's a reason why we shouldn't be using drones. It's because we don't just take out the target. We take out a lot of innocent civilians in these countries where these drones attack. And then lastly, we are going to find ourselves in a continued state of unsustainable spending and borrowing to the point that we are going to experience a monetary collapse unless we fix this.
Thank you, Governor. Tonight, second question, all questions submitted by social media, was submitted by Jeff Tangway of Colorado via Facebook. Question is, in what ways does the war on drugs impact Americans, and how could these effects be reduced? Is there a more efficient way to deal with the issue of drug use in America? 2 minutes, Jill Stein.
Rocky, actually. Rocky, you go first on this one.
Oh, Rocky goes first. I'm sorry.
No,
thanks for
recognizing.
Okay.
The war on
just so we understand, as each question comes up, a different person.
About opening statements.
A different person start. Do we have opening statements?
Unfortunately, no.
We didn't?
No.
Okay, so
that's
you're
it.
Supposed to.
I'm trying to do opening statements. My apologies.
I didn't know we had opening statements. I thought we were right to the question.
Two minutes. So let's start on the left there, and then we'll go with our second question, starting with Rocky. Opening statements, 2 minutes each.
Okay, this will be opening statements, and then we'll go to the second question. Thank you.
Bill Stein, please. Thank you, Gary.
Good, Jill.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you. Always glad to lead.
The American people are in crisis. We are losing our jobs, decent wages, our homes by the millions, affordable health care and higher education. The climate is in meltdown, and our civil liberties are under attack. The wealthy few are richer than ever, rolling in more dough than ever, and the political establishment is not only not
making it better. They're actually making it worse, imposing austerity on everyday people while they continue to squander trillions of dollars on wars for oil that we don't need, on Wall Street bailouts, and tax breaks for the very wealthy. The American people are at the breaking point, and we need to turn that breaking point in this election into a tipping point to take back our democracy and the peaceful, just, green future that we deserve. And we do that by standing up and making sure that everyday people have a voice in this election and a choice at the polls that's not bought and paid for by Wall Street, and by advancing the critical solutions that the American people are clamoring for by large majorities. Our campaign is calling for a Green New Deal to create 25 million jobs, end unemployment, jumpstart the green economy, and that means putting a halt to climate change and making wars for oil obsolete. We're calling for health care as a human right through Medicare for all, and for bailing out the students, not the banks, and making public
higher education. By the way, it was not in my notes about an opening statement, so I apologize. There should have been an opening statement, but it was not in my notes, because I follow my notes. I'm a Jewish guy from Brooklyn. We do what we're told.
Larry, more people are here to listen to you than us. Thank you for being here and giving us this opportunity.
Rocky, 2 minutes.
We are at a pivotal moral point in our nation's history. We've all suffered through the sellout of our government to Wall Street. Young people are burdened with crushing record tuition debt. Millions of families have lost their homes. Retirement accounts have been decimated, while Wall Street's fat cats who are buying our elections have made out like bandits. We've never had the disparity in income and wealth that we see between the very wealthy and all the rest of us since the 1920s. Our poverty rate has never been so high since 1965. Child poverty and infant mortality rates in the United States are next to the worst in the industrialized world, and among 50 nations, the United States has the worst rate of women dying in connection with pregnancy and childbirth. And under Obamacare, there will be 32 million people without essential health care by the year 2022. And during the Bush and the Obama years, our Constitution has been shredded while the imperial presidency has expanded, with presidents who think they can unilaterally take us to war, often on a pack of lies, with presidents who think the federal government should have the authority to round anyone up, including U.S. citizens, and imprison them up to the rest of their lives without charges, without trial, without legal representation, and without the right of habeas corpus. And our elected officials are sound asleep when the Pentagon is warning that climate change is a greater long-term security risk to the United States than terrorism.
Okay.
So if you like the way things are going, vote Democratic or Republican. If you want real change, vote your conscience, vote justice.
Over
economic
the...
justice, social
okay,
justice,
Rock, okay, Rock.
Environmental justice.
Back to our opening after the first question, opening statement from Virgil Good.
Thank you, Larry. I want to say thanks to Jill, Gary, and Rocky for being here on the four issues I'm going to address right now. You can deduce their positions from what I say. But I'm going to name four positions that I am very different from Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. First, Obama and Romney both claimed that they were and still are for a balanced budget. Reality. The Obama budget this year was $1 trillion in deficit. The Paul Ryan budget, which passed the U.S. House, was $600 billion in deficit. I have the courage to submit a balanced budget if I'm elected president right after I'm inaugurated. Secondly, I am for jobs in America, for American citizens first, and the only candidate that has called for a near complete moratorium on green card admissions to the United States until unemployment is under 5%. It makes no sense to bring in so many foreign workers when unemployment is so high in this country. Secondly, third,
we're running close on time.
We need to end super PACs and political action committees. That would be one of the best things that would open up our country for more democratic process and a greater voice by the people. And lastly, we need term limits. It's time to focus on doing the best job in Congress instead of the next election and the next fundraiser.
And now an opening statement from Governor Johnson.
The country is in really deep trouble. We should not bomb Iran. We should end the war in Afghanistan tomorrow. Bring the troops home tomorrow. Marriage equality is a constitutionally guaranteed right on par with civil rights of the 60s. Let's end the drug wars. Legalize marijuana now. Let's repeal the Patriot Act. I would have never signed the National Defense Authorization Act, allowing for you and I, as U.S. citizens, to be arrested and detained without being charged. That's the reason we fought wars in this country. I promise to submit a balanced budget to Congress in the year 2013. That is a $1.4 trillion reduction in federal spending. If we don't do this now, we are going to find ourselves in a monetary collapse. And a monetary collapse, very simply, is when the dollars we have in our pockets don't buy a thing because of the accompanying inflation that goes along with borrowing and printing money to the tune of 43 cents out of every dollar we spend. I'm the only candidate that wants to eliminate income tax, eliminate corporate tax, abolish the IRS, and replace all of that with one federal consumption tax, the fair tax. I think it reduces the American economy. It's the answer
Governor,
to our exports. It's the answer to American jobs.
Okay. 2 minutes. All right.
Now.
Thank you, Gary. We'll now get to the second question. I'll repeat it, and we'll start to go around with Rocky. In what ways does the war on drugs impact Americans? How could the effects be reduced? Is there a more efficient way to deal with the issue of drug use in America? That was submitted by Jeff Kangway via Facebook.
The war on drugs has been catastrophic for our country, a waste of national treasure and unbelievable human tragedy. I remember when Bert Stringfellow came to me and told me about his son, Corey, who had been sentenced on his first drug offense to 15 and a half years in a federal penitentiary. But when I became mayor, I worked really hard with the Clinton White House, and on the day that President Clinton left the White House, he signed a presidential pardon, saving Corey Stringfellow a decade in a federal penitentiary. Weldon Angelus is sitting in a federal penitentiary today with a 55-year sentence for selling marijuana on three occasions because the informant said there was a gun around somewhere, not that he'd used it, that there was a gun present. So with gun enhancements, mandatory gun enhancements, and the judge who had to enter the sentence said it was an outrage, it was unjust, but 55 years. This is the kind of human toll in this country. We don't just need to legalize marijuana. We need to end drug prohibition just like we ended alcohol prohibition and treat drug use and abuse as a public health and education issue and get it entirely out of the criminal justice system. We have the largest incarceration rate in the world by far. We have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prison population. We have more people in prison and jails in this country on drug offenses than Western Europe has in their prisons and jails
on all offenses.
10 seconds.
This has to end. We, the American people, need to come together, right, left. It doesn't matter about partisanship. We need to demand immediately
right.
an end to this insane war on drugs.
Good.
Thank you. I am an advocate of a balanced budget now, not 10 years down the road, and I would cut federal spending on the war on drugs. However, drug use is primarily a state issue, not a federal issue, but there are federal laws. I am not, and this is going to not set well with most of you, I am not for legalizing marijuana use or other drug use. If we cut back on the war on drugs, that would be a minor part of the federal budget. About $12 billion is being spent this year out of a $3.8 trillion budget on the war on drugs. But a lot of small things. I'm not for funding Planned Parenthood. I'll take that to zero. I'm not for funding broadcasting.
We're on drugs.
I know, but I'm just pointing out that how small the federal war on drug money is in terms of the entire budget, but I am for reducing it because we've got to reduce nearly everything that's generally funded in order to get to a balanced budget.
All right. Governor Johnson, the war on drugs.
90% of the drug problem is prohibition-related, not use-related, and that is not to discount the problems with use and abuse, but that should be the focus. So let's legalize marijuana now. And right now in this country, we are at a tipping point on this issue. 50% of Americans now support legalizing marijuana. Why is this the case? It's because we're talking about it. It's because debates and discussions are raging at dinner tables that haven't been raging at dinner tables in the past. So let's regulate it. Let's tax it. It's on the ballot in Colorado in November. Coloradans have the opportunity here really to change drug policy worldwide. Coloradans get it. Citizens of Denver 6 years ago voted to decriminalize marijuana on a campaign based on marijuana being safer than alcohol. I am not a hypocrite on this issue. I have drank alcohol. I've smoked marijuana. I don't drink alcohol. I don't smoke marijuana. But I can tell you categorically, in no category is marijuana more dangerous than alcohol. And yet, we are arresting 1.8 million people a year in this country on drug-related crime. We have the highest incarceration rate of any country in the world. 2.3 million people. Half of what we spend on law enforcement, the courts, and the prisons is drug-related, and to what end? Look, this is not about advocating drug use. 50% of kids graduating from high school have smoked marijuana. That's an issue that belongs with families, not in the criminal justice system.
All right. Thank you, Governor. That's time up. Jill,
Does anybody have any rebuttal?
Jill.
I have to make my statement first, and then the rebuttal. Thank you. So as a medical doctor, previously in clinical practice for about 25 years, I can say with a real understanding of the science and the health impact that marijuana is a substance that is dangerous because it's illegal. It's not illegal on account of being dangerous, because it's not dangerous at all. It is well understood that the health impacts of marijuana are mainly the public health and safety impacts from the illegal drug trade associated with marijuana prohibition. So the most important thing we can do to get rid of the health problems associated with marijuana is to legalize it. And on day one, a president, if she wanted to, could instruct the DEA to do a really radical thing and that would be to use science in determining what substances will and will not be scheduled. Because the minute science is used, marijuana is off the schedule. And the same goes for hemp, which is also a substance for which there are no bad drug effects. There are no bad health and safety effects. Yet there are very important economic benefits. Both of those substances should be legalized. Marijuana should be regulated, but in a way that does not create another tobacco monopoly.
Okay.
But permits small businesses
right,
to actually flourish.
Now, if anyone wants to rebut, raise your hand. You want to rebut, Rocky?
Yes. And I'm not sure it's real rebuttal because I'm in total agreement, especially, well, on all issues that Jill raised. But, hemp, really, why is that illegal? Except for those moneyed interests that control our Congress, we need to rise up as one and say, legalize industrial hemp now.
Okay. Anyone want to rebut?
Less than 40,000 people in prison on drug charges in 1971 when this war on drugs began. Now we have over 500,000 of our people in prisons. I would entertain as president a presidential pardon for everyone that didn't commit other crimes that's in our federal prison
gate
because of drug offenses.
Anyone want to rebut? Remember, we have 6 questions in all. We're only finishing the second one. Anyone else want to rebut?
When I was governor of New Mexico, I met with judges in Portland, Oregon that asked to meet with me. The meeting started. I didn't know what to expect, but what they said was, hey, we're here to support you. We're here to support what you have to say, but we would like to share with you a story here that perhaps you can pass on to others that would let others better understand it. They said that methamphetamine really is the boogeyman drug. People that use methamphetamine do bad things. Their behavior is altered. They said, we're not suggesting, and by the way, it disparagingly falls on the poor. It's the best example we can think of a prohibition drug. It's cheap. It's easy to make. So the consequences fall disparagingly on the poor. They said, we're not suggesting the following, but if cocaine were legal, these people would be using cocaine without the negative behavioral impact. Now, what I will tell you about cocaine, and it would be wonderful if the government told the truth, cocaine puts holes in your heart. Really, people that use cocaine their entire lives die from a heart attack. Whitney Houston is the best example uses cocaine all the time.
All right. 1 minute rebuttal. Go ahead.
Let's be clear about my position on this. Unlike Gary, unlike Rocky, and unlike Jill, I'm not for legalizing drugs. If you want that, vote for one of them. Don't vote for me.
Okay, now. Okay. We remind you that tonight's debate questions were submitted via social media, and I'm presenting them exactly as they were received. The next topic, and we'll start with this one with Virgil, concerns foreign policy. It comes from Greg Salazar of Los Angeles via Reddit. Do you think that an annual military budget of nearly $1 trillion is absolutely necessary to keep us safe? And in a broader sense, what do you think should be the role worldwide of the United States military? 2 minutes, Virgil Good.
As I said, if I'm elected president, I'll balance the budget, and part of the cuts have to be in the Department of Defense. We cannot do, as Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan suggest, increase military funding by $2 trillion over the next decade. I support a strong defense, but we need to retrench rather than trying to be the policeman of the world. We have too many soldiers, too many troopers scattered around the world. Our bases need to be reduced around the world, not increased, and the United States should stop trying to be the overseer of the world. That will save us billions and billions of dollars.
All right, Governor Johnson.
Let me start with a premise here. We need to provide ourselves with a strong national defense. It's one of government's fundamental responsibilities,
But the operative word here is defense, not offense, and not nation building. The biggest threat to our national security is the fact that we're bankrupt, that we're borrowing and we're printing money to the tune of 43 cents out of every dollar that we spend. So I am promising to submit a balanced budget to Congress in the year 2013 that would include a 43% reduction in military spending. How does that go down? Well, a 43% reduction in military spending takes us back to 2003 spending level. It's getting ourselves out of all the military engagements that we are currently involved in. Stop with the military intervention. It's reducing the military footprint worldwide, its bases, its troops that we have stationed in Japan, in South Korea, and in Europe. It's intelligence, it's research and development. All of these components go into a 43% reduction when it comes to the military. We have to stop our military intervention. We have to stop with the drone strike. We have to stop with a policy that has us with hundreds of millions of enemies to this country that but for these policies would otherwise not exist. It's a recognition that when we talk about foreign aid to other countries, it's propping up foreign dictators that are on our side as opposed to the other side. We pick winners and losers. And there are a whole lot of unintended consequences that go along with this. Right now, we're funding the Syrian insurgents, and they're made up of jihadists. Did we not learn anything in Afghanistan where we funded Osama bin Laden?
All right. Discussing military spending, Jill.
Yes, I want to agree with Gary and with Rocky, and I guess not with Virgil in this instance, to say that a foreign policy based on militarism and brute military force and wars for oil is making us less secure, not more secure. We need to cut the budget and bring the troops home. And we need to end the drone wars, not bring the drones home because they're already coming home. We need to put an end to the use of drones and actually lead, not to lead this development of a new arms race, but to lead in an international treaty and a convention to permanently ban the use of drones as a weapon of war and as a means of spying on the American public. $5 trillion spent on the Afghanistan and Iraq war, thousands of American lives, hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians. This has not made us more secure. And it's what we're seeing, in fact, is the blowback against this policy. Because dropping bombs on weddings and funerals, which is what drones do with an incredibly high civilian casualty rate, that is not a good way to win the hearts and minds of people in the Middle East.
37.
We need a foreign policy based on international rights, on international law, and on human rights, and on fighting climate change, which should be the war that we are all fighting, not this war for oil.
All right. And now also on the question of military spending, and then we'll have a rebuttal if anyone raises their hand and wants to. Again, we have three more questions coming. On military spending, Rocky.
President Eisenhower, in his last presidential address, warned this country about the military-industrial complex. When he first wrote that speech, he termed it the military-industrial-congressional complex, and for very good reason, because these folks vote for massive funding for completely wasteful projects, like the F-22, that the Department of Defense said, we're never going to use it, it's outmoded. Why would we spend billions of dollars on it? And because the contractor had other contractors or subcontractors in 44 different states, and they do that very strategically, these people, the Republicans and Democrats alike, voted for additional funding. That is treason against our country when our treasure is being wasted, when we need that treasure to go toward education, job, and the biggest challenge facing our planet, and that is combating climate change. We need to focus on where the real public interest is rather than where those who are benefiting from this corrupt system have their stake. Now, there are two fundamentals when it comes to our engagement, military engagement. I think our leaders have completely either forgotten it or ignoring it. First, no wars of aggression. If you haven't been attacked or you're not imminently going to be attacked, to attack and occupy another country like we did Iraq is an illegal war of aggression under the Kellogg-Briand Pact, under the United Nations Charter, against the Nuremberg Principles. At the Nuremberg Tribunal, we prosecuted and convicted people for those same crimes. And secondly, our Constitution requires the decision whether to go to war is Congress's alone. They have the sole prerogative. It cannot be delegated to the President. Right. Congress has so cowardly done with the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and later
the use of force against anyone
Iraq.
Want to rebut? You want to rebut Virgil?
Very briefly. Rocky is correct about following the Constitution. I would not be in Syria unless Congress makes a declaration of war. We will not stay in Afghanistan if I'm elected president unless Congress makes a declaration of war. Only by going through that constitutional process can we ensure that the will of the American people is addressed when we have issues like Syria,
okay.
Afghanistan, and Iraq.
Jenny, now this has to be rebuttal. You want to rebut something, Gary?
Well,
okay.
Please.
It's a rebuttal question.
I was opposed to going into Iraq before we went into Iraq. I did not think there were weapons of mass destruction, and I said in 2003, if there are weapons of mass destruction, we have the military surveillance capability to see that happen, and if that happens, we have all sorts of options. But if we go into Iraq, we're going to find ourselves in a civil war to which there would be no end. Afghanistan, I thought initially that that was totally warranted. We were attacked, we attacked back. But I would argue that after having been in Afghanistan for 6 months, we wiped out al-Qaeda. That was 11 years ago. We should have gotten out of Afghanistan 11 years ago. So here we are now on Iran, the largest demonstration in the world in support of the United States after 9/11 was in Iran by over 1 million citizens that showed up in support of the United States. And we're going to bomb Iran. We're going to bomb the citizens of Iran. We're going to find ourselves with another 100 million enemies to this country that we wouldn't otherwise have.
I think both candidates said they would not bomb Iran. But I would like the questions to be rebuttal so we can move along. This is our fourth question. The economy is the topic for this fourth debate question. The question was submitted by Nico Torino via tout. Since this was done via tout, let's go to his question on the video.
Some enough minutes to get a college education in the year 2030, the price ticket is nearly $400,000. Is college really worth it at that point? And if so, how do we provide that opportunity to everyone?
The question, if you didn't hear it, was some estimates give the pricing of college education in the year 2030 at maybe $400,000. I don't know if that's correct, but his question was, is college even worth it at that point? If so, how would you provide the opportunity of college for everyone? And this question should begin with Governor Johnson.
Well, first of all, as governor of New Mexico, we established lottery scholarships, which allowed really any graduating high school student from New Mexico to go to college with those costs paid. So what's the federal role, though, when it comes to education? And what's the primary reason in this country why college tuition is so high? Well, it's because of guaranteed government student loans, that because of guaranteed government student loans, no one has the excuse for not going to education. And so because of that, institutions of higher learning, colleges and universities, are immune from pricing, but if kids would take a harder look at it, gee, I don't think I can afford $15,000 a semester. I think I'll just sit this one out. When that happens in mass, I guarantee you the cost of college tuition will drop dramatically. But today, that is a situation that doesn't exist. I can't afford $15,000, and yet friends and family will point and say, look,
you can get a guaranteed government student loan. That is another one of government's unintended consequences that have college tuition at such a high rate.
So I think it's time to make public higher education free, as it should be. We've done this before. When our troops came home from the Second World War, we provided free higher education through the GI Bill. And we know that it pays for itself. For every dollar that we invested as taxpayers, $7 was returned in benefits to the economy, including more than enough revenue to cover the full cost of those tuition payments. This is something throughout the 20th century. Throughout the 20th century, we provided a high school education for free to our younger generation. Why? Because it was essential for economic security. And we owe it to our younger generation to give them a secure start into their economic lives. But in the 21st century, a high school degree won't cut it. You need a college degree in order to have economic security. So it's only right that we should now be providing that for free. And while we're at it, it's time to, instead of bail out Wall Street for the fourth time, which is what the Fed is doing right now with QE3, $40 billion a month to bail out Wall Street banks again, instead, let's bail out the students and do something really useful with that bailout.
Okay, time's up. On a question of college, Rocky.
Well, thank you. Our forebears had the wisdom to set up a system where everyone in this country would have a free secondary education. And that may have been enough then, but for our nation to regain its global competitive edge, we must provide higher education, either a college education or technical education, but it's for the future of our country and to meet the ideal in this nation of equality of opportunity, that we should provide a free and equal educational opportunity in colleges, in technical schools, and do the right thing for the future of our country and for our young people. This is not a radical idea. It's done in many parts of the world, and it pays off huge dividends. As to those students who are saddled with this enormous tuition debt now, it's reached over $1 trillion, more than the entire credit card debt in this country. And what did Congress do for their fat cat contributors? They made student debt non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. So you can go charge a Maserati on your credit card and write that off in bankruptcy, but somebody that went out and did what they could to get a decent education can't get a new start. So we need to demand of Congress allow the dischargeability and bankruptcy of student debt now.
Thank you. Virgil Good on college.
You might not get what you want to hear from me, but you're going to get straight talk. We can't afford more federally subsidized student loans, and we can't afford more Pell Grants. I wish I could stand here and tell you, yes, we can give you more. No one's going to have to pay for it. Our debt of $16 trillion is bearing down on us. And as Governor Johnson said, we could well be like Germany after World War I. I do not support, and the person that asked the question on the Internet is not going to like it, but we can't afford more Pell Grants and more federally subsidized student loans, certainly not at this time. We've got to balance the budget and decline the debt.
All right, now. Anybody have a rebuttal?
Rebuttal,
Governor.
Free comes with a cost. Free
free, very simply, is spending more money than what you take in. Free is simply accumulating more to the $16 trillion in debt that we currently have. Free is gotten us to the point where we are going to experience a monetary collapse in this country due to the fact that we continue to borrow and print more money than we take in. We're printing and borrowing money to the tune of 43 cents out of every dollar we spend. Free, the Federal Reserve System in this country, the Treasury prints money. They give it to the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve gives the money to the banks at 0%. Do they give it to you or I? No, they buy up treasuries in a closed loop, making profits off of you and I with no risk whatsoever. This is what has to stop in this country, is the notion of free. There needs to be a level playing field for everybody.
Any other rebuttal?
Yes.
Rocky?
I suppose if Virgil got on there, we cannot afford not to provide a great education and equality of opportunity for all of our young people in this country. We need to insist on prosperity, not austerity. And in a recession, it's not time for these massive spending cuts as called for by Bull Simpson and by both of these people running for president with the major parties. We need to get behind our workers and our young people and provide what's going to build this nation in the future. Great jobs and a great first-class education.
Jill and Denver. Jill. The bottle, Jill.
I'm agreeing with Rocky here that we cannot afford not to educate our students. Our younger generation is the greatest resource we have, and their participation in our economy is not just good for them, it's good for all of us. Every generation, the economy needs to be rebooted by fresh imagination and by the fresh genius of a new generation. That doesn't happen when a generation is locked into being indentured servants. That's what our students are now. We need to bail them out and create free public higher education.
Virgil, rebuttal.
Simply point out, both Barack Obama and Mitt Romney in the last debate, Romney said, I'm for expanding student loans and Pell Grants. You've got four candidates you can look to if that's your big issue.
All right, the fifth question for tonight's debate centers on civil rights. Like the previous questions, it was submitted via social media and is being presented exactly as sent to us. The question comes from Melissa Farley on Twitter. This is for the candidates, and this go-round will begin back with Jill. Where do you stand on NDAA Section 1021, the ability to detain Americans indefinitely? Where do you stand on that and why? Jill.
It's an outrage that 1021 NDAA was ever passed to start with. It's an incredible betrayal of our civil liberties that the president has assumed dictatorial rights to put us in prison at his pleasure without charge or without trial. This is unallowable and is a basic offense against the very foundation of American liberty, and it should be repealed. And while we're at it, we must also repeal the president's interpretation of the Enforcement Act in 2001, the Military Use Act, that said that assassinations are in the power of this president. We need to put an end to assassinations. We need to put an end to the FISA Act, which retroactively legalized unwarranted wiretapping against U.S. citizens. We need to repeal the Patriot Act, and we need to stop the persecution of whistleblowers who blow the whistle on crimes by our government.
seconds, Bill. 10 seconds.
Franklin said, if we sacrifice our liberty for security, we will wind up losing both. So let's take back our liberty. That is the foundation of true security.
Rocky, question of detaining Americans in Delaware.
Well, I went to law school because I believed as deeply as one can believe in the rule of law, in justice, in the fact that our system of justice can provide for everyone. And what we have seen through the Bush years and now with President Obama has been so absolutely subversive and anti-American. There's been no more anti-American act, I think, in our history than the NDAA. And President Obama, don't be fooled about this, in 2009, he asked for the power to indefinitely detain people without charges, without a trial, without legal assistance, and without the right of habeas corpus. We are on the road toward totalitarianism, and that's not an exaggeration. Take a look at this. If one person can determine against whom and under what conditions laws passed by Congress and our Constitution are going to be applied, that spells tyranny. It's the very definition of tyranny. So what happened when President Obama came into office? He said, oh, about our international treaties and our own domestic laws, absolutely forbidding torture. Let's forget about those war crimes and move forward, not look backwards. What about those people that committed countless federal felonies by illegally spying on American citizens? He said, let's forget about it. And he did the same thing when he was in the United States Senate, and after he promised just the opposite to everybody before he got the Democratic nomination, he voted for retroactive immunity, criminal immunity for the telecom companies that participated in the illegal surveillance program.
All right.
That shows such utter disregard for the rule of law. We need to demand more of our leaders.
One sentence
answer, Larry. If I were president, I would have vetoed NDAA.
Why can't we all be that simple? Governor?
Well, because, Larry, this is like shamelessly pitching oneself to vote for me. So I'm going to try and take advantage of shamelessly pitching myself here. I would have vetoed the National Defense Authorization Act, allowing for you and I as U.S. citizens to be arrested and detained without being charged. I think what's really significant is last year, last December, the ACLU came out with a report card on all of the presidential candidates. And I apologize to the three others on stage that weren't in this report card. But they came out with a report card on all the presidential candidates. ACLU, a group dedicated to civil liberties, a group dedicated to the Constitution, a group dedicated to the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, a Bill of Rights. I think this is really important. 24 liberty torches was a perfect score. Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum had 0 liberty torches out of 24. Newt Gingrich had 4 liberty torches out of 24. Barack Obama had 16 liberty torches out of 24. My hero, Ron Paul, 18 liberty torches out of 24. And Gary Johnson had 21 liberty torches out of 24. That's very proud.
Okay, anybody rebuttal? I guess we all agree on that. All right, we go to question number 6. We will, by the way, have a discussion on this, and we'll have 2-minute closing comments as well. To begin this round, we'll start with Rocky. The 6th and final debate question was selected by my editorial team from the many questions submitted to us via social media. In a post to Facebook, Russ Haight asked the presidential candidates this. Have to think about this. And we start with Rocky. If you had the opportunity to write one constitutional amendment with an absolute guarantee it would be approved by Congress, and then following that, 3/4 of the state legislatures. What would you amend?
I've already written it. Please take a look at our website, voterocky.org. It's the new Equal Rights Amendment promising that equal rights under the law will never be abridged on account of gender or sexual orientation. It's time that we have federal protection for members of our LGBT community and absolutely prohibit any discrimination on account of gender. That amendment, without the sexual orientation provision, fell by not getting the approval of only 3 states in this country. It's high time we revive it, add sexual orientation and gender identification, and make that statement as a nation that we'll never allow discrimination on those grounds again.
Before the others respond, do you think, Rocky, that would pass today?
I do think it would pass if the people made it clear that we insist upon it, and there will be a heavy political price paid by anybody in Congress or in the White House who opposes it. It's really up to us. Major social movements in this country always started at the grassroots level. We are the leaders. Let's make them follow us.
Virgil, how should I amend the Constitution?
Term limits. If we don't adopt term limits, you are going to continue to have a Congress that is always worried about the next election instead of what's best for the country. And let me say this, if we could get it through Congress, and you might have to grandfather all the members of Congress there right now, which I wouldn't want to do, but you might have to. I am for term limits between 6 years and 12 years. I don't care what it is, whether it's 6, 8, 10, or 12. It would enhance Washington so much because I was there 12 years. It's a constant worry about the next election. Where's the next fundraiser going to be? Who are the PACs going to be there giving me money so I'll be able to outspend my opponents? You watch the Chicago television. It is constant advertising. And the PACs are the biggest contributors to that for congressional elections. I will tell you this. If we could get it through the House and the Senate, it would go like a knife through hot butter of the state legislatures. Term limits, knife.
Are they... As a follow-up, Virgil, you think they'd vote themselves out of office?
No, that's why I said you would probably have
grandfather
those now. I think you could get it through if you would grandfather now, or at least let it start by giving them, if it was a 12-year, give them 12 more years, and that would get it through.
Governor, what's your constitutional amendment?
Term limits. The roots of all evil are politicians that beat their chests, and in the name of electing me or re-electing me, we're going to end the war on terror, we're going to take care of the illegal immigrant, we're going to take care of health care, we're going to have free education for everybody, we're going to end the drug wars, you name it, elect me, re-elect me, I'm going to save the world. And Congress gets elected. We need to balance, I hear congressional ads running all the time. We need to balance the federal budget. The next ad that runs is, here's the bacon that I've brought home to my state, amounting to billions of dollars, and if you want the bacon to continue to be brought home, vote for me. I think I'm living proof that term limits work. Look, I really enjoyed being governor of New Mexico. I really enjoyed it, but I knew that I was term limited. I had 8 years. Did I push the envelope as much as I might have pushed it if I'd have had 4 years as opposed to 8 years? I don't think I did. I think I pushed the envelope just far enough to get reelected, and I got reelected in a state that was 2-1 Democrat, but I got reelected, and then it was, man, this is all about doing the right thing. I do not want to leave office thinking coulda, shoulda, woulda. So term limits, in my opinion, really is the silver bullet. Politicians would get elected and do the right thing as opposed to whatever it takes to get elected and reelected.
And, Jill, how would you amend the Constitution?
my concern is that even with term limits, unfortunately, corporations and big money can still buy what they want and are still buying our candidates because they get them into office anyhow, whether it's for 4 years or 8 years. So I want to pass the amendment that will clarify that money is not speech and corporations are not people. Because in stealing our rights of personhood, corporations have done exactly that. They have gotten the rights of personhood and have basically taken away our rights of personhood. So corporations can fight and stop and block the laws that we need to protect our air and our water and our climate and worker safety and public health and campaign finance. These are not constitutional issues that belong to corporations. These are political questions that should be decided by communities through the political and legislative process. We should not be precluded from forming the laws that we decide we need because corporations say that our forming such laws and protecting ourselves is against the Constitution. That is a violation of what the writers of the Constitution intended. And I will support that amendment to clarify, to get our constitutional rights back from the corporations that have seized them.
This has been a very lively evening. You will each have 2 minutes to close. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right.
Got it.
We start with the way we started, or do we go around about?
We're actually going to go next in line to Virgil.
Okay. This is 2 minutes, closing statements. You don't have to rebut them. You can say anything you like.
Again, thanks to Free and Equal. Thanks to Larry King. Thanks to Gary, Rocky, and Jill. Open up the process, give broader views to Americans, and we will have a better and greater country. 4 things that we've got to do right away. I repeat, balance the budget now, not 10 years down the road like Obama and Romney are talking about. Jobs in America for American citizens first. I am the only candidate that has advocated a near-complete moratorium on green card foreign worker admissions into this country until unemployment is under 5%. It makes no sense to bring in so many foreign workers when we need jobs in America for U.S. citizens first. Thirdly, I agree with Jill on super PACs and PACs and defining speech, but I don't think you need I think it can be done with legislation with enough whereases and a sense of the House and a sense of the Senate in it. I want to see political action committees eliminated, individual donations only, full transparency, and we need to end the super PACs that are totally just about controlling federal elections. It's time for a grassroots candidate like Virgil Goode to be president, and he'll work for term limits, too.
Governor?
I would not be standing here before you right now if I didn't think I could do a really good job as president of the United States. And I am basing that on the resume that I have. I've been an entrepreneur my entire life. I started a one-man handyman business when I was a junior in college and actually grew that business to employ over 1,000 people in Albuquerque. It's amazing what can happen when you say when you do what you'll say you'll do and when you show up on time. It's just amazing. Now, I sold that business in 1999. Nobody lost their job. Business is doing better than ever. As governor of New Mexico, I ran completely outside of the political system. I got elected governor, Republican governor, in a state that was 2-1 Democrat, and made a name for myself vetoing legislation. I may have vetoed more legislation than the other 49 governors in the country combined.
I vetoed 750 bills. I had thousands of line item vetoes. It made a difference when it came to billions of dollars worth of spending. It made a difference when it came to laws that would have told you or I what we could or couldn't do in the bedroom. With regard to immigration, which I think really is a hot-button issue, and it kind of highlights differences between me and everybody else, let's start off with the premise that immigration is really a good thing. Let's make it as easy as possible for somebody that wants to come into this country and work to get a work visa. Not a green card, not citizenship, but a work visa so that applicable taxes would get paid and that we would have no criminals working in this country. Look, we hear about wasted vote right now. Wasting your vote is voting for somebody that you don't believe in. That's wasting your vote. I'm asking everybody here, I'm asking everybody watching this nationwide to waste your vote on me. Vote for me, Gary Johnson. And you know what happens? I'm the next president of the United States, and I guarantee you nobody will regret that. You'll find somebody with no quit. You'll find somebody that will wake up every single day and take on the debates and the discussions that need to be happening in this country and aren't happening today because of a lack of leadership.
Thank you, Governor. Bill Stein, Bill, 2 minutes.
There's a famous saying from Alice Walker that the biggest way people give up power is by not knowing we have it to start with. In fact, there are 90 million voters who are not coming out to vote in this election. That's one out of every two voters. That's twice as many as the number who will come out for Barack Obama and twice as many as the number who will come out for Mitt Romney. Those are voters who are saying no to politics as usual and saying no to the Democratic and Republican parties. Imagine if we got out word to those 90 million voters that they actually have a variety of choices and voices in this election. And I want to focus especially on those 36 million students and young people and recent graduates who are effectively indentured servants because of the high unemployment rate and the draconian, unforgiving loans that have been customized especially for students lacking any consumer protection. If those students decided to stand up and go to the poll and come out and vote for free public higher education, for ending student debt, for bailing out the students and breaking up the banks instead of the other way around, which is what they are doing, we could turn politics in this country on its head on November 6th. I encourage you, go to my website, get the word out. There is a choice in this election to take back our democracy, to create jobs for everyone through a Green New Deal that will put an end to climate change and make wars for oil obsolete. We can do this now by standing up and making it so.
Thank you, Jill. Finally, Rocky Anderson.
Imagine if there had been a candidate included in the Obama-Romney debate to challenge our plutocracy, our government that is run by and for the benefit of monstrous corporations rather than in the interest of the people of this country. We know the Republican and Democrats have some differences, but both of them have morphed into a militarist, corporatist, anti-democratic force that has betrayed basic human and civil rights. We know that both of these major candidates have been bought and paid for. That's why neither of them stands for health care for all as in the rest of the industrialized world. It's why neither of them ever talk about breaking the stranglehold the military-industrial complex has on our government. And that's why neither of them talk about providing the essential leadership on the climate crisis, the greatest tragedy facing Earth's inhabitants. Obama and Romney have refused to discuss the corrupting influence of money flowing from Wall Street banks, from the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical industry, the fossil fuel industry, or military contractors
because they are the recipients of that corrupting money. And neither of these dominant party candidates will have called for federal protection for marriage equality. Neither of them have called for an end to poverty, an end to the insane war on drugs, or for the implementation of a WPA-like initiative that would hire millions of workers. So thank you to Christina Tobin and Larry King and Free and Equal for providing this opportunity to present democratic solutions in the public interest on which we can all work together far beyond this election.
First of all, as a moderator and a host for 55 years, I've always believed in free speech and the right of people to throw their hat into the ring and for the right of people to be heard. Going back to years ago when I introduced Ross Perot to the public and got to hear his thoughts, and John Anderson before that in Illinois, and Ralph Nader and the others who have come forward to go to the battle. You're kind of Don Quixotes in a way, but the windmills have a way of stopping, and we have a way of saluting you just for getting into the fray. So I thank you for your efforts, all you've done. I also want to salute Christina and what she does. Christina's gonna wind things up, but how did Free and Equal start?
Well, it came from my dad. You may recall him, Jim Tobin. He ran for governor here back in 1998. And so today's his birthday. Happy birthday, Dad. And my legacy is through him and Taxpayers United of America. It lives through him. And so now we have Free and Equal Elections, a nonpartisan organization uniting the grassroots movement across the spectrum to break the stranglehold of the two-party system, to bring the power back to the people.
I know Christina has some closing remarks. I want to thank Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, and Virgil Hamlin Good for participating in this. It was my pleasure to be here, and I thank you all very much, and thanks to the audience as well. And I'll turn it over to Christina Tobin for the close. Christina?
I want to thank Larry King for your dream come true. Larry, please. Of course, my executive producer, Marcy Forgrave, and producer, Gary Franchi, the whole crew of people, thank you to them, all of our supporters out there, and the candidates, and we the people. And I have some good news for you. How many people enjoyed this debate tonight? People want to see a second debate. Well, here at Free and Equal, we're a nonpartisan organization. All the donations go through great things like this and the big things we're doing after the election. But we are holding a debate next Tuesday in Washington, D.C., 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Fucking weirdo.
And thanks to one of our sponsors, Rob Ritchie with fairvote.org, we're going to implement instant runoff voting. And you can go on our website tonight to vote for the candidates that you want, the two candidates with the highest votes at Free and Equal, freeandequal.org. through instant runoff voting, the same the Grammys use. Rick gets rid of the spoiler effect. You have 24 hours to vote. Go online when you go home today to vote. And on Thursday morning, we will announce the two candidates with the most votes who will be in Washington, D.C. to debate on international issues. Please vote tonight, freeandequal.org. So thank you, Larry.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Great pleasure being with you. Always love coming to Chicago. Thanks very much.
We the people. We the people.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, with that, folks, I hope you enjoyed it. Now we will have some commentary. Chris, you there?
Yep.
Wow, so it sounds like there's going to be a vote to see who were the two winners, and whoever got the two highest, are those going to be the folks that are going to be on the October 30th debate?
Yep, that's ridiculous. That negates everything that they just did. These are not these candidates. You know, they have what, six questions, four people blasting
right
through them. You know, with audience, applause.
Right.
And now they're going to go. Now they're going to go to four. You know, they haven't had a chance to debate all the questions. Yeah, that I think is it's really awesome that they did this, but if you're going to do it. Have two good debates, cover all the key issues, domestic, economics, and then international. Let everybody hear everybody.
Right, and now it's only going to be down to two, but I guess it's going to be up to some folks on who it's going to be. But I hope it doesn't turn out to be something like, we'll see. We'll see how it pans out. Could be good, could be bad. We'll just have to see how it pans out. So what are some of the things that stuck out in your mind tonight?
What stuck out in my mind?
That
socialism and communism is alive and well and people who sound like they care about you. Sorry, I was being sarcastic. But I listened very intimately to all four of them, or three of them, because Gary Johnson didn't show up at the third-party response to the second debate. But I've had a chance to listen to Rocky and Stein, so, I heard nothing new. But what I really wanted to hear, and what I still want to hear, is the two liberty candidates, the two constitutional candidates, because when you deal with Johnson and Goode, you have the left and right side on social issues, but the same on Constitution First, fiscal, those issues. And that's who I really would like to see debate, because that's what I'm interested in, because I'm not interested in voting for a communist. Hello?
I'm here. Now as things stand, we have a really good possibility, pretty much scheduled, that we will have that possibility on Thursday night because of an announcement to make that I spoke with Virgil Goode today, actually, and he said for me to contact him on Thursday about him coming on the show Thursday evening at 10 p.m. to talk with us and answer some questions, namely some of those of the questions from the first presidential debate, and of course, I'm sure he'll be open for some other ones. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I'd love to. I really wish, and it's awesome that we're getting so many Constitutional Party people on. I really wish that we would have got more Libertarian Party people on. In this process, we
right,
tried.
Right, right. Yeah, me too.
Maybe we didn't try hard enough, who knows, but, when you're doing this stuff on top of everything else you're doing in life, you just kind of take what you can get, and people were willing, from the Constitution Party, were willing to get on it, and show up on the shows. I really, like I said, I don't need to hear any more of Stein and Rocky Anderson because, they're left of Obama. And that doesn't fit our clientele, our audience and the people we hang out with but I'd really like to get, Libertarian Party, Constitution Party matched up right down the line. And I think, you know, most people on my group and other places, they pretty much know, you know, what the basic issues are, but it's neat to see people get up and do a debate and answer questions. Personally, I think Goode's only problem is he's too polite. Everybody else was taking time, rolling over, you know, jumping all over it, saying as much as they should.
Southern gentleman.
You know, he's that Southern gentleman, and we've interviewed him before. You know, and if I could ever be, a debate coach for him, I'd work on that. You know?
Yeah, he definitely was very polite, and, you know, definitely when I say, okay, gentlemen, he would definitely fit that description.
Yeah.
Now, Anderson, I will say this, at least in his opening statement, he didn't sound as much of a liberal until the end. At first, you know, I was like, well, this guy doesn't really sound that liberal until the end of the opening, remark.
He was like that in the other debate, the one where he the third party response debate that I broke down and transcribed and lived for 3 or 4 days. He has some strong points that sound, if you didn't listen to the rest of his platform, you'd go, he's a pretty good guy. Yeah, he's pretty right on this issue and that issue and constitutional on this. And then, like in the third party response debate, he didn't say anything about green or climate change until the absolute end, and then he let it out of the bag. You know, he just hiding. He's another watermelon. You know,
free stuff for everybody. Unlimited.
Oh my
money.
Gosh. Well, you know what? Just with some of those responses, I got the feeling, of course I could be wrong, but I got the feeling there was more, would you say this is a fair assessment, that it sounded like at least that there was more liberal folks there than conservative?
It just seemed like they all of them, outside of Virgil saying, I'm sorry you're not going to like me on this, but I'm not for legalizing drugs. I think they all got applauses pretty aggressively through the whole thing. I think that I personally, you know, just listening to the applause and the responses, there's probably a lot of young Ron Paul and or libertarians there, you know, that got in.
There is definitely that
social liberal crowd was there, but I don't think the social
liberal
crowd.
Right, that's probably
crowd,
what I was talking about more so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but there's a difference between the social liberal crowd, but fiscally, constitutionally conservative, and the social liberal crowd that's there because they want Stein to give them everything from cradle to grave. They're two different types of people.
Well, you know, we do have, I do like that they were pretty much on point with, you know, we do have a choice. Which, yes, we do, and it's one of the few things, even though I'm an environmentalist and I need to say it's about Jill Stein, but one of the few things that I agreed with her is about those 90 million Americans out there, you know, and get them out to, instead of staying home, get out and vote for third party, you know, regardless of which one you, you know, which one of the parties that you would vote for, because, that's definitely the grassroots against the, you know, there's times where I thought, you know, I wonder if Rocky Anderson has listened to some of the shows, because some of the terminology that he's used, you know, and phraseology that he's used, we've talked a lot about here on Broad's Logic.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if that's, other people influencing the way we talk and us picking up their terminology, you know, we're all kind
of
embedded in
that. Well, of course not. No, it's not. It's the other way around. It's as I said. No.
Yeah. Well, the way I'm looking at this thing, and it's interesting, Rex, you know, it seems like, you know, the three or four of us always have some kind of a chat popping up, and we check in with each other through the day. And Rex said something about off of something I said, but I basically said, I wish I knew what I knew today a year ago. and Rex and I were kind of chatting about that. Because, well, last night in the show, and then we in a chat also, because, you know, if I would have known what I know, and what's interesting to me, and I don't know why Ron Paul, well, who knows? He had you know, a son in the Senate, and he had one more run to make before he retired, so why shift back out into a third party? But I would imagine that if the Ron Paul people would have moved, you know, i.e. maybe to the Libertarian Party where he's been before and taken his people with him, that they wouldn't have absolutely upset this whole election. I'm just not sure. I don't think we'll ever fully understand the people who have stayed in the Republican Party through thick and thin, through all the abuse, through all the corruption, through all the crime, you know, why they did that versus go out and stay and empower a third party. I don't understand it, because Ron Paul actually endorsed Chuck Baldwin, who was the 2008 Constitution Party guy. You know, and the thing that I've
power has probably brought to bear, more power and force have probably brought down to bear this year, because, I mean, this is Romney. I mean, that's something probably came down from Romney. I don't think that while, you know, he wasn't a strong candidate, and I'm talking about McCain, I don't think he would use the same kind of tactics to get people to endorse him as Romney would. I think Romney probably used some kind of forceful tactics on Ron Paul, maybe some kind of threats to his son. I'm not saying physical threats, but maybe political ones. To say, hey,
well,
look,
no, I'm
you
just
don't
talking about
on.
Ron, but I'm just talking about Ron Paul.
Right.
Staying with a Republican Party versus going leaving. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know his Liberty Movement, there's nobody can match their drive and energy, you know, and their organization.
Well, one thing that the Tess in the chat said that I want to bring up before it disappears is that, you know, from all the scrolling, is that, yeah, she knew, because when you were saying that you wish you knew what you know now a year ago, you know, I think she says, agrees with that sentiment and feels it as well, because then she said she wouldn't waste so much time and effort, you know, and almost fruitless effort, well, obviously fruitless effort, trying to get a broker to a broker convention. I mean, it might have, I know we're, you know, Monday night or quarterbacking or whatever, Monday morning quarterbacking, but, you know, perhaps if all the folks who were fighting for a broker convention would have been able to spend that energy and effort and time into bringing out third parties, you know, there would be a even better position now for third party candidates if that was the case.
Yeah, it's like I said. I wish I knew what I knew today, because the time and energy that I've spent on a losing deal. I mean, Ron Paul, I mean, he's an amazing guy to have done what he's done for the last 30, 40 years. It's just mind-boggling. The abuse. See, a lot of people don't get this. When I started doing the Ron Paul research a while back, this happened to them in 2008 also. I didn't just find stuff in 2012. The only difference is that we didn't have the YouTube, the recordings, you know, like we do this time. Now it's just, I have 1,000 line items on corruption in this whole primary, in articles and YouTube videos and you know, people taking stuff from their phones. You know, they just didn't have that in 2008. But I have learned that, you know, the exact same thing happened to them in 2008. So, you know, the corruption and the abuse, that's why I was saying I was surprised that Ron Paul stayed in. I mean, if they would have run in 2008, there's like a blank spot out there in terms of our personal history of that. But, you know, he did this twice in a row.
I don't know why he stayed in the party. But, as I said, probably stayed in the party more for his son than anything else. But what you heard from any of the candidates or all the candidates tonight, which part do you say that you like the best?
Wait, obviously,
you heard
crap. Somebody's spending all their time and energy on here talking about Obama like we don't know about Obama. Anyway, what did I like the best?
Yeah.
Is that what you asked me? About all of them or about?
Well, just what was the thing you liked the most that you heard tonight on the debate?
Well, I like that socialists always expose themselves, and then you can go, okay, I got you figured out. I think that what do I like the most? I like the fact that there's people out there that actually understand the importance of the Constitution, and they actually understand that the government is overreaching. They actually understand that the government and the people that we vote into power are controlled by, you know, the bankers and the globalists of the world. And they're not, and they don't kid themselves about that. I like the part I really like, and it's probably in my own personal revelation, is how bad our foreign policy is. You know, when I read that we have up to 900 bases or points of expenditure around the world, you know, in places that the war has been over since 1945, was it 45? Anyway, don't quote me on that one. But when you're looking at, when you look at the insanity of our foreign policy and the wars and, you know, and the illegal wars and the bases and the money behind that, and then tied to the Fed and all of that, it's just mind-boggling. And it's good to know that you've got candidates out there that understand that. And, of course, you know, and I'm not going to – even though I don't agree with Johnson's – some of his social policies, both Johnson and Good get that. They understand that the federal government is an overexpenditure in everything they do. They understand that the Constitution is abused every day of the week by these people. And so it's good to know that there's two viable third parties, and probably more, you know, if they'll come on and do the work and get up there, you know, that people, that we have a chance of this really changing something. That's what I liked about it.
I don't talk a lot about, you know, getting out for the faith, but one thing personally that I liked was the talk about legalizing industrialized hemp. And, I mean, that's a topic I've been saying for a long time because, you know, you really cannot. And I think you said something about getting a judge on, or not a judge, a sheriff on, to talk about the drug issue. But I mean, I really like to hear people finally starting to put that in the conversation, talking about industrialized hemp, because I mean, you can create such a large market in a lot of your states, you know, with tobacco production. I mean, that's a staple crop for their state. And while tobacco consumption is decreasing, that gives industrialized hemp would give a lot of those states who do rely a lot on the tobacco industry to grow.
Let me ask you a stupid question. Why in the hell would they outlaw industrialized hemp? I mean, what?
It is illegal.
No, I know, but why?
Well, the unconventional race.
Somebody's going to roll a joint while they're harvesting?
No, they're afraid that folks who are growing industrialized hemp will be able to grow the actual marijuana plants in with them, and since the plants look so similar, you won't be able to differentiate the two, so that it'd be hard to enforce.
Have inspectors? Don't they have a bunch of government people sitting around on their ass doing nothing all day long that can't inspect a field? I mean, this something's weird here.
Well, and plus, they hinted on it a little bit about, you know, keeping it actually makes the government money to keep it illegal.
Mm-hmm. Which means there's a corporation out there somewhere that makes something that has a lobbyist that helps keep it illegal. Right?
I'm sorry, I missed it. I was reading something in the chat. I'm sorry.
I said that means there's a corporation out there that doesn't want the competition of that product, that has
probably
a lobbyist.
Mm-hmm.
That helps keep it illegal. More
I'm sure, probably the lumber industry, sure, because pretty much anything you can make from wood, you can use hemp. I mean, there's pretty much anything that's made of wood can be made from hemp. I mean,
except
with hemp, you can make.
Four.
What's that?
Except for a 2x4.
saw. You can make a 2x4 with hemp. Yes, you can. You can make furniture.
Oh, you're talking about a compressed product. Okay. You're talking about an engineered piece of wood. Okay. All
right,
I get you.
Right.
I'm talking about a
right.
2x4. You ain't going to cut no 2x4 out of a hemp stock.
Right. You're right. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yes. Well, just like
you're
you have that. Now they have what they call the composite wood, which is
all I know all about
plastic.
It.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Trust me. I'm a builder.
Yeah.
When we get back to your green shows, we'll go at it over the green stuff.
Sounds good to me.
I'm actually certified in that stuff. Oh, God, help
me. You know, I like the green stuff. Go ahead.
I don't have a problem with environmental smart shit. I have a problem with the green crap that, you know, and the companies and the government and, you know, I mean, that's the problems I have with it. But anyway, we don't want to talk
right.
on that one.
Well, another thing is, when I was going to bring up, because, wow, we only have 10 minutes left already. When Jill Stein was talking about her, you know, free higher education, and when she's talking about 7-to-1 ratio, you know, from the money from the GI bills and how much wealth that created, that's actually, if that is true, that's actually the same ratio that investment in the space industry
Yeah, but you know what?
Brings
There's a
about.
Difference between, you know, people love to pick statistics out to prove a point. First of all, there's a hell of a lot of difference between what happened after World War II when all those men came home after war and they utilized the GI Bill to improve their lives and they'd already paid a price, and taking a bunch of kids and giving them something for nothing who haven't earned or suffered anything in their life. These socialists always love to take this crap. I mean, all you have to do is look at here's what just blows me away about a socialist. They want to do for society what every parent knows you can't do for a child if you want to produce a decent adult. That's just what blows me away about them, you know. And I listen to her spew her stuff, you know, her green new. And you didn't. I don't know if you caught that, but you know what the WPA was, don't you? That was FDR's work program. That was Rocky. So both Stein and Rocky want to fund tens of millions of people in jobs. And hers is to do green industry, and I can get into the details of it because I heard her talk about it and what she thinks they can do to create all these jobs. And I watched that program right here in Washington State, and it was a total foobar. It just totally fell on its face. It was a total corruption, and they didn't get anything done. It was, you know, all this re-energizing and sealing up homes and all this crap. You know, I'm a remodeler. I know what this stuff takes. And you just don't grab, you know, some guy off the street or out of a rehab center and have him go out there. And, you know, it's just an illusion. And I've seen the program work before, but she thinks she's going to put 23 million people to work doing this. And Rocky wants to do the WPA, the FDR program, of taking all these people and going out and putting them to work like FDR did. You know, and they don't think past the end of their nose. Number one, the unions, that's just the same problem we had when they tried to, you know, use prisoners to do work. The unions came in and shut it down. And the equal rights people came in and said, oh, you can't make those poor people work. I remember back in the 80s in the housing projects, they tried to get people who lived, got free housing, free everything in their lives, to get up and clean up their properties in these urban housing. And the equal rights people came in and sued the government and said, you can't do that. That's against equal, you know, that's against human rights. I mean, there's so many stopgaps to all these insane, these ideas that sound so good on paper, or so good from the stage. But anyway, I don't want to talk about these socialists. They drive me nuts, you know. But what I want to see is I want to see Johnson and Good debate, because those are the two people that we're going to – that.
They may very well be the two that
get picked
by the vote to debate next week.
It depends. All the young people that want something for free may be voting like crazy tonight online, online poll.
Sure, I understand. Let's hope it doesn't become something like a. One of those, I don't know, I don't even watch them, so I really can't make a reference to those shows that do voting. So.
Yeah, I wish they would run these guys, put them all back up there on stage where they can all answer the same questions.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like the idea of it being down to two, just because, you know, I think it would give them more time to do it. But on the other hand, it does kind of defeat
the
purpose, as you said.
Yeah.
As I said, it does kind of defeat the purpose of what it's about, right?
Yeah. The purpose of this thing is to expose, you know, the third-party candidates. You know, I don't know. I just thought that was a little weird, but nobody asked me. So anyway, I thought it was interesting. You know, they stumbled around a little bit in the beginning there.
Right.
It was really cool to have Larry King come on and do his thing. And,
yeah.
And I love some of the things
he said. It's an organic show. What can you say, right?
Yeah. So we got a shameless plug for Tex and Rex. When we're done here in the next 5 minutes, we got Tex and Rex going to do a post-analysis, right? Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, I've got an errand I've got to run, but then I'll probably be on the show after that. So, yes, folks, so after here they are going to have discussion and analysis on the Tex and Rex show. So I suggest that can be found under the category Election 2012. But actually, I made it easy for you now that I think about it. Just go to the description part of this show, and I already provided a link to their show after this. So just go to the so I already provided the link in the description of tonight's episode.
Okay.
So, and then I just put in the chat for you, Vita K, the address to the contact page of Bard's Logic Political Talk. And if you could just send me that information, perhaps we could do a show on that one night.
What is
either
that?
Before or after the election. Oh, she's they're talking about, you know, China trying to get into Africa.
Oh, they're already doing it.
Right. A lot of the Chinese can move to their population, can move into Africa,
That was that whole video I've been promoting every day. I hope people would listen to it. You know, with Lindsay Williams, he went through all this stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They just cut, that's one of their big trade deals. South Africa and the Bank of South Africa is the largest bank in South Africa. South Africa and China have cut one of their cut the U.S. dollar out deals. China does huge business down there. And they're already in the process of moving, you know, people down there. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just one of the deals that we're facing, that Romney is going to get tough on China. Roar. Yeah, I'm going to talk tougher, so it sounds like I'm really going to do something about it. Well, they're setting on most of they are now our number one loan. I think they are number one now. Japan used to be. And they have trillions of dollars of our cash that they bought up. And they're cutting all these trade deals with all these countries around the world, Brazil, Africa, India, Russia, you know, need I go on? It's a big old list, and I think I've talked about it every night. And they're going to circumnavigate the U.S. dollar. Iran, the Arab Emirates states, it just goes on and on. So what's going to happen?
Well, Chris, hold on. We only got a couple minutes left, so then I don't want to go into the show for Tex and Rex that long. But we do have a caller. I'm going to open up your mic. If you'd like to chime in real quick with a comment or quick question, go ahead. 954, your mic is live. Okay, I guess they just wanted to listen in. And so, I hate to cut things off short, but as I said, the link is provided in the description of the chat for people to continue this conversation about tonight's debate at the Tex and Rex show. I'll probably be there within a half hour or so. But I will end this as I end every evening, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. Thanks, everyone, for coming to this edition of Bard's Logic Political Talk. I hope to see you again, on tomorrow night. And then remember, on Thursday night, we're looking to having Virgil Goode on that night to talk about the presidential debate questions. So thank you, everyone. Take care, and have a good night.